Alright. Well, thanks. I didn't know my scientific career is so exciting. it's my pleasure.
I,
yeah.
Somehow I got things confused. You talk about Buffalo, right? Not about P wave.
No, well, in this particular talk, we're looking at the Buffalo state.
Right.
But see, this paper is mostly about the mixture of singlet and triplet pairing. I won't be talking about this about it now. We can, you know, we can talk
right.
later, or
we'll
I can.
Talk about it now.
Now I'm going to talk about the fluctuations near the full deferral Arkadyshnikov state, and in particular we're interested in the zero temperature regime when the superconducting transition occurs from the normal state into the non-uniform FFLO state rather than to the BCS one. I'll tell the details. Well, this work was done together with Kirill Samohin from Brock University in Ontario. Those are the references, and I am particularly grateful to the National Science and Engineering Research Council in Canada for the financial support when this work was done. And of course, I appreciate the support and help of the KITP for selecting me the KITP scorer and giving this opportunity to visit this wonderful place and talk to famous people here. This will definitely give me the motivation for my further research in Hofstra University. So I just want to tell you where it is.
I have a question already. CRSNG, is that the French acronym?
Yes, right.
Yeah, okay.
This is the English, this is the French.
Very good.
No, sorry, I can't say it in French.
That's all right.
That's five words. I can say it, at most three of them in a row. Right. So, the Hofstra University is right here. It's a beautiful place on Long Island, 25 miles from New York City, from Manhattan actually. Good environment. Well, it's mostly undergrad university, about 8,000 students enrollment. I'm not sure how many faculties. So the Department of Physics and Astronomy is probably, I think it's 7 or 8 professors. Full and part-time. And then, yes, of course, because of this undergrad university, teaching load is quite high. Sometimes we are more concerned about the strong correlations in student works rather than those in the condensed matter and cold atomic gases. All right. Well, back to the subject. This is the outline of my talk. I'm going to tell you about the phase transition from the normal state into the non-uniform full deferral Larkin-Ovchinnikov superconducting state. And in particular, we are interested in the superconducting fluctuations of the order parameter on the normal side of this transition line. For this, we'll have to derive the expression for the fluctuation propagator. We'll consider both three-dimensional and two-dimensional case, and the case of, you know, generic crystal symmetry, and then we will find the fluctuation corrections to the spin susceptibility and the quasi-particle decay rate or the fermionic self-energy, and shown then in some cases they give us divergence singular contribution as function of the magnetic field. And finally, the discussion will follow. So, as we all know, the magnetic field suppresses superconductivity by interacting with the charge of electrons. This is the orbital mechanism of the superconductivity suppression. So the condensation energy is competing with the kinetic energy of the electron motion because of this field. On the other hand, the magnetic field can interact with the electron spin, and this is so-called paramagnetic or Pauli mechanism. And here the superconductivity in spin singlet superconductor can be suppressed because of the Zeeman splitting of the Fermi surfaces for the fermions of different from different species. And the corresponding magnetic field is given by so-called Clouston-Chandrasekhar limit, which basically shows the competition between the condensation energy of the Cooper pair and the polarization energy of the electrons, of the electron spins in the magnetic field. Well, we all have been in the last week's beautiful talk when we saw this nice picture of how the Cooper pairs with zero momentum are broken when we apply electromagnetic field, which changes the Fermi momenta for two fermionic species, in this case for spin up and spin down. But it also turns out that if the superconductor is paramagnetically limited, so the orbital effects are suppressed, this competition between condensation energy and the polarization energy can lead to the formation of a peculiar non-uniform superconducting state where the momentum of the Cooper pair is not equal to zero, because of when we want to couple two fermions from two Fermi surfaces, from two different Fermi surfaces, the net momentum will be not equal to zero. And in some conditions, under some conditions, this the corresponding critical field can exceed the Clouston-Chandrasekhar field of the transition to the uniform state. Thus, the full Deferi-Larkin-Ovchinnikov superconducting state can be stabilized, and its simplest realizations are either plane wave, as what considered by full Deferi, or the superposition of two plane waves, which give us cosine, cosine-like modulations of the orbital parameter in the real space. So this state, this FFLO superconducting state, is a result of competition of the orbital and paramagnetic pair breaking. And well, the relative importance of those two mechanisms is given by the, can be estimated using the Mach parameter, which is basically the ratio of the orbital and the paramagnetic critical field. So in the paramagnetic limit, when there are no orbital effects at all, Mach parameter is equal to infinity, and we have and we can have a stabilization of the FFLO state. The case when both orbital and paramagnetic effect are present, paramagnetic effects are present, was analyzed by Grunberg and Günther back in '66, and they found that the superconducting state with the modulation of the order parameter in the direction parallel to the magnetic field can exist at the values of Mach parameter which are greater than 1.8, which corresponds to the ratio of those fields equal to 1.28, roughly. But unfortunately, in the most classical superconductors, the Mach parameter is of the order or less than 1, and thus the FFLO superconducting state cannot stabilize there. So, there are two possible ways to stabilize it. First of all, we need to reduce the orbital effects, and one can do it by considering the two-dimensional or layered superconductor where the magnetic field is parallel to the layers. In this case, the orbital motion of electrons is suppressed. And basically, actually it was shown by Bulayevsky that if the angle between the external magnetic field and the conducting layers is getting smaller, we have a bigger and bigger region of the FFLO state on the temperature versus magnetic field phase diagram, right? And then the full phase diagram was worked out in the work by Shimahara and Reiner, and then those results were generalized for the case of thin films and surface superconductivity. So this is how the very generic phase diagram of the FFLO superconductor look like. Here I have the temperature in the units of the BCS critical temperature zero field. And one can see that if there are no orbital effects, then at the temperatures smaller than roughly 0.56 TC node, one can have a transition from the normal into the FFLO superconducting state. Right? So this line, this field, corresponds to the transition from normal to the FFLO state. This line is the Clouston-Chandrasekhar paramagnetic field, and this line shows just a second-order phase transition line from normal to the BCS superconductor. So here we have the BCS state. Right? The actual transition from the FFLO state, which is here, and the BCS state is not shown here because of we need to consider. It just requires calculations in the particular geometry, in the particular for the particular material, in the, and at some particular values for the parameters such as impurity concentration. So impurities are detrimental for the FFLO state, and it was shown by Slamazov and later by Builevsky, Gusenov that if we start from the clean limit and then increase the impurity concentration, the region of the FFLO state on the phase diagram becomes narrower and narrower. And finally, we restore the first-order phase transition line from the normal to the uniform BCS superconducting state, right? So we need those two conditions, basically. And thus, we have to look, if you want the experimental measurements, if you want to see the FFLO state in the experiments, we need the material which is clean and paramagnetically limited. And two most promising types of such materials are heavy fermions with the big values of the effective mass, and organic superconductors which are inherently very clean. And basically, in the experiments here. People do the measurements of the thermodynamic quantities and transport coefficients, and locate the anomalies on the field and temperature dependence of such parameters. And here I just show you typical results of experimental measurements in heavy fermion compounds and organic superconductors. These are, as far as I know, results of the measurements of the magnetic susceptibility and the resistance. Those are also magnetic measurements, and here we also measured resistance and the magnetic susceptibility. So it's important that, for example, in this material, the magnetic field was parallel to the conducting layers, right? So again, we have this suppression of the orbital motion of electrons, right, which favors the stabilization of the FFLO state, right?
What's U in this?
Uniform, Q equals zero.
So in all these cases, it's really just an anomaly seen within the superconducting phase, and it's interpreted
exactly, because of, the reasoning is the FFLO state, the FFLO state is very favorable for this material, it should be there, right? So then when they measure the field or temperature dependence of some parameters, they see anomalies or singularities in it, and they associate with those right. Transition lines. That's it. That's to the best of my knowledge. I don't know about any experiments which really probe the structure of the FFLO state. Is this what you're asking about?
Yeah. What are the experiments that one would want to do?
We predict one of possible ways to measure the superconducting fluctuations. for example, because of we see that fluctuations near FFLO state and near the uniform BCS state behave in a different way. So
that's still sort of indirect using theory. Well, he'll tell us about it.
Say again?
You're heavily using theory to talk about the behavior near the state, right?
Yeah.
It'd be nice if there were an experiment that directly characterizes the
yeah.
nature of the
state. I don't know. We give predictions. At this point. Right.
You want to measure pyramid surface structures or whatever, but you can't do.
You can look for a modulation of some kind.
Yeah. Photo emission at these fields is probably problematic.
Scattering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you could.
Some sort of scattering experiment. Yeah.
That's probably tiny.
Field, neutrons don't couple to electrons.
I mean, one can check the publication, and I'm pretty sure there were theoretical works for the temperature field behavior of such parameters, but nobody really measured those dependencies. I mean, nobody really used the measurements of such dependencies to say that, look, we have a flow state here because of this particular parameter goes such and such. All right. This is just, another very promising candidate for the formation of the flow state. The ultra-cold neutral Fermi gas with the population imbalance has no impurities, no orbital effects because of it. It's neutral. And the interaction could be adjusted in a big range. This is the topic of this workshop, and I'm glad to show this slide. So by making the population imbalance, by making the population of the of different thermionic species in such a system unequal, one can, in principle, make the system equivalent to the superconductor in the Zeeman field, with the fermionic energies of different species being, shifted, being unequal. So in principle, one can say that the flow state can possibly stabilize there. There is also possibility for the formation of other non-uniform phases, not particularly FLO, which is S-wave state with the with non-zero. Q, which is modulation of the parameter, or the net total momentum of the Cooper pair. And without going into any details, I mean, we heard many beautiful talks during the workshop. I just showed those pictures of from the experimental measurements, and I would like to briefly flash those references to the theoretical works on the possible existence of the non-uniform flow state in such systems. All right. Now, since we are interested in fluctuations, right, all those works were on the mean field properties of the flow state. Now we want to talk about the fluctuations or existence of the virtual Cooper pairs in the normal state very close to the transition temperature. First of all, let me just mention the superconducting fluctuations near the BCS state or near the uniform superconducting state. The pioneering works here were done by Slamazov, Larkin, Mackey, and Thompson. And the result is basically that even in the normal state, if we are close to the critical temperature of the superconducting transition, there could be virtual Cooper pairs, short-living Cooper pairs, which provide a superconducting type of the contribution to the thermodynamical and transport properties, such as the resistance here, and you see because of them we have this downturn of the resistance curve as the function of temperature near TC. Basically, there could be three types of the fluctuation corrections to this to the thermodynamical properties. First of them is because is additional superconducting type of the contribution because of some of the electrons are taken from the normal state and they form the superconducting condensate even we are above TC. This is so-called Aslamazov-Larkin term. Another one is exactly opposite to it because of we form the Cooper pairs, we need to take electrons from the normal state. Thus, we decrease the normal state contribution. This is so-called density of states type of the term, type of the contribution. And finally, the third term is because of the normal electrons can Andreev scatter on the virtual Cooper pairs. This is so-called Mackey-Thompson part. And all those three terms can provide the contributions of the same magnitude. They can have different sign depending on the particular thermodynamical parameter or on the geometry of the sample and so on. So basically the calculations of the fluctuation corrections require evaluations of several typical diagrams. Density of states, Mackey-Thompson, and Aslamazov-Larkin. Right, and basically some of them are positive, some of them are negative, so there is interplay of different different phenomena. Again, without going to the details of the macroscopics, let me simply show you how the fluctuations can provide corrections to the specific heat simply by considering the free energy functional. Indeed, in the normal, well, the free energy functional in the presence of the superconducting condensate or superconducting only parameter can be shown as the sum of the normal part and the superconducting part, which depends on the term of the second and fourth order, and the gradient term, since we are interested in the fluctuations. So if we take into account only first two terms, we get this jump of the specific heat at the critical temperature. Now, if you want to find the fluctuation contribution, let's say we can be far enough from the transition point or transition line, so we can neglect the fourth order term and consider only the second order one and the gradient term. And then we can consider the contributions from the Fourier transforms of the order parameter, so they actually become sum of the harmonics with different k, right? And finally, the partition function becomes just a product of the Gaussian type of integrals, and the free energy becomes you know the having this this type of the expression, right? And finally, the specific heat, which is related to the derivative of the free energy with respect to temperature. Now we can rewrite it in terms of epsilon, where epsilon is the deviation from the critical temperature divided by Tc. So epsilon is a small quantity, right? And we have this summation over k over the modes, which becomes the integration. And you can see that the main contribution from the fluctuations comes from the values of k very close to zero, right? So the fluctuation occur near the momentum of the Cooper pair equal to zero, right? So this sum or this integral gives us the singular corrections to the specific heat as a function of epsilon, because of epsilon is very small. We have 1 over square root dependence of C, which goes like that. And I just refer to this recent book of Larkin and Varlamov, where the very extensive analysis of this phenomena is done with all the references and discussion of the fluctuation contributions to different phenomena. Now, that was at the part of the phase diagram. Where the magnetic field is zero, and we were approaching the transition line moving along the temperature axis. In principle, one can set temperature equal to zero and cross the transition line here. So here we have a realization of the superconducting quantum phase transition, right? And this point, this transition point, will be the quantum critical point. Where here I flipped this phase diagram. So here we have a temperature, and the critical parameter alpha here is related to the external magnetic field, right? And again, I just want to mention those theoretical works where the quantum phase transition or transition at zero temperature from normal to the superconducting state, to the BCS superconducting state, was analyzed. And some of the results were, you know, the presence of two or more different regimes, different fluctuation regimes. It could be, the fluctuation could be quantum or classical regime, depending on which parameter basically goes to zero faster, temperature or the magnetic field. How we it depends on the way how we approach the transition point. And then in the low-dimensional systems, such as film or the wire, the fluctuations can provide the singular corrections to the thermodynamical properties or transfer properties, such as the fluctuation conductivity. So that was the motivation for our work. Now that instead of the BCS phase transition everywhere on both temperature and the field axis, we have the region of the FFLO phase at low temperatures. So we want to consider the transition in very low temperatures from normal to the FFLO state. And the main idea here is that because in the FFLO state the fluctuation occur near the momenta, which are close to the momentum of the Cooper pair, QC, their phase volume is greater. So the fluctuation corrections must be also greater, and they can provide more singular contributions to the thermodynamical quantities, right? Even though the corresponding BCS quantity is not singular, we found that under some conditions, the fluctuations near the flow state are indeed singular and divergent, right? So this is what we consider. We have a clean spin singlet superconductor. External magnetic field enters only through the Zeeman splitting of the Fermi surfaces for the fermions of two different species. And then we set temperature equal to zero to basically consider this transition point. This is our Hamiltonian. We use the generalized BCS type of the Hamiltonian. So in the free particle part, Xi K is just a quasi-particle, fermionic quasi-particle energy, and H is the Zeeman field, which is related to the external magnetic field. In the interaction part, well, we simplify the situation by factorizing the interaction potential, where phi k are the symmetry factors related to the irreducible representation of the particular point group, which is relevant to the particular crystal symmetry, right?
I understand the rationale for neglecting the orbital.
Say it again?
The rationale for neglecting orbital magnetic field.
Neglecting orbital magnetic field. Well, we consider the paramagnetic limit, the orbital. We say that the orbital effects are very small. For example, it could be in a situation where the magnetic field is parallel to the layer.
In two dimensions.
In two dimensions, for example. Yeah. And well, later on we'll just set lambda to be just, you know, equal to coupling constant. Well, then, to study the dynamics of the order parameter, we need to consider the fluctuation propagator, which is given by the summation of the couperons or Cooper ladders. And in principle, it's given by this sort of the equation, and its solution is given by this, when again lambda is the coupling constant. And C is the particle-particle diagram, or Couperon. In this diagram, the Green's functions have different orientations of the spin, right? So they have different expressions for the quasi-particle energy, depending on the direction, depending on the Zeeman splitting, right? Well, when we calculate those diagrams, we obtain this expression for the reciprocal of the fluctuation propagator. So it depends on the logarithm of the ratio of temperature and the critical temperature in zero magnetic field. Psi is the d gamma function. And this term, omega k, is basically the difference of the fermionic quasi-particle energies for two different species of the fermions. It depends on the magnetic field, on the Zeeman field, the quasi-particle Fermi velocity, and Q. And this nu m is the Matsubara frequency. So
that's an average done over
directions. Direction, yeah.
But just on the Fermi surfaces. No, it's not restricted to the Fermi surfaces.
Let's see. No, I think it should be integrated all over the, you know, three dimensional, yeah.
Right, because you got the energy, right? So it's
right.
Just overall momentum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I would say it's over the whole space, but yeah. So anyway, if you want to find the transition point, which means to find the critical field or critical temperature, we need to find the pole of the fluctuation propagator, or the solution of the equation reciprocal of the propagator equals zero at zero frequency, right? And then this gives us relation between the H, the temperature, and the, you know, possible momentum of the Cooper pair. For example, if we set Q and T equal to zero, we restore the magnetic field of the normal to uniform BCS state phase transition. Right? On the other hand, in clean isotropic superconductor, we can see that the maxima of the critical field corresponding to the transition is at QC, which is not equal to zero, right? And this happens in temperatures which are smaller than that T star or 0.56 T node temperature. So basically what we have there is that if the temperature is less than this, the temperature corresponding to this tricritical point, and if we move from the normal state, we have the transition to the non-uniform FLO state in the first place, right? Then, of course, eventually we have to have a transition into either uniform BCS or mixed state, but yeah, we don't know the line along which it occurs, and we can have more than one transition. In the large case, they can correspond to different Landau levels, right?
It looks as if that point lies where the maximum, at the maximum field of the BCS.
Not exactly.
Is not.
No. And as I said, this is very generic phase diagram. I mean, I shouldn't put the numbers here because of those lines are different in different situations. Right? The region of the flow phase can be very narrow. Right. So, well, this expression is nice, but it's difficult to handle analytically. So we want to find the power expansion of the fluctuation of the reciprocal of the fluctuation propagator near Q equals to the moment of the Cooper pair and the zero frequency. So we have considered several different cases. For example, in the isotropic 3D, when the fermions form just, you know, simple 3D parabolic band with this sort of dispersion. Indeed, the reciprocal of the fluctuation propagator can be expanded in terms of the frequency, and then this part gives us the dependence on the field and on the Q, right? So this function of X depends on the momentum Q. It depends on the ratio of Q to the magnetic field. So to find the state which will be stabilized in the superconducting side, we need to consider the minimum of this function, right? This function is given by this solid line, which corresponds to the isotropic 3D. I'll talk to isotropic 2D case later. So now, in this minimum point, the value of Q, the value of the Cooper pair momentum, corresponds to the to this value of X, which is 1.2, and the critical magnetic field is given by the magnitude of this minimum, right? Because of this function plus log of the magnetic field, of the critical magnetic field to the H node must be zero. So the corresponding critical field is roughly 1.5 times greater than the magnetic field of the second order phase transition. And QC is given by this combination of parameters, right? So finally, in the three-dimensional case, because of this, this minimum looks nice and analytical, we expand the fluctuation propagator in terms of frequencies and the momenta and find this expression. So here epsilon is the deviation from the transition point in terms of the field. Then we have the absolute value of the frequency. And finally, the fluctuation propagator depends on the Q, on the absolute value of Q, but not on the direction of it. Right? So we have simply Q minus QC. And indeed, the BCS type of the fluctuation propagator.
So that just,
yeah.
There's no temperature in here? Or?
Temperature is zero.
It's zero temperature.
Yeah, already. Yeah. So for the BCS type of the fluctuations, the fluctuation propagator would be something like 1 over NF epsilon plus gamma frequency plus K Q square. Yes, yeah. Well, this is just a frequency.
Right, but but if you did a final temperature, those would just be Mutz bar frequencies? Or? No.
If I did the final temperature. Yeah, I know. At some point, indeed, we have to set temperature equal to zero.
I just wondered what the index on the frequency.
Yeah, let us look.
Yeah,
right, because I mean, you're right. we were thinking about it because of this polygon function becomes the log, just log because of when temperature is equal to zero. Right, this is just infinity. So then we have log. Yeah, at this point we don't set temperature exactly equal to zero. We just say it's small.
It's small.
Right. And then, so yes, you're right. From that point of view, that is just a Matsubara frequency. But then, if you want to set temperature equal to zero, we have to, you know, convert it to the real frequency, or, you know, take the retarded or advanced. Yeah.
Instability is omega equals
zero. Yeah. Right. Okay, so here I just want to say that this is the main difference between the BCS and the FLO type of the fluctuations. Indeed, Here they occur near some finite value of Q. Here the fluctuation propagator has just a minimum, or let's say it is equal to zero at Q equals zero. This is Q, this is L to the negative one, right? That's why when we, well, I'll show later, that's why when we calculate the fluctuation contribution corrections, you know, we have to integrate over the surface. The main contribution to the fluctuations come from the vicinity of the surface of the sphere of the radius QC, rather than from the from just a single point. Well, that's it. In the generic band situation, when you know the degeneracy of the is the isotopic 3D space is lifted by, let's say, band structure or the crystal symmetry, or by gap or by the gap anisotropy, we can show that the minima of the functions of Q in the fluctuation propagator now become well separated, and we can expand the fluctuation propagator not near the sphere, but near the particular values of the Q of the QC. So now it becomes a function of direction of Q as well. So instead of fluctuations, you know, happening near the surface of the sphere, we have fluctuations near particular values of Q, so they form some sort of star in the reciprocal space, right?
So the values of Q are the ones where the Fermi surface is a little better nested, or, you know, where...
I would say it all depends on the symmetry of the crystal. Well, basically, values of Q correspond to the solution correspond to the pole of the fluctuation propagator, right? And we, well, there are many solutions, you know, of this equation, but we want those Q which correspond to the highest, to the greater magnetic field, because if we move from the high magnetic fields towards the lower fields, right? From normal state to the supertracking state. So now the value of Q which gives us the greater value of H will correspond to the state which stabilizes first, right? That's it. In the 2D case, well, we think the situation is more interesting because of the fluctuation propagator becomes non-analytic, and we can't expand it in frequencies. Well, in particular, let's say those functions which contribute to the fluctuation propagator now have this type, this shape. So, for example, the Q dependence of the fluctuation propagator is this, and graphically it is given by the dashed function, dashed line on this plot. So you see, instead of this analytical minimum, we have this very sharp, upturn of the fluctuation propagator as the function of Q, and we can't really expand it in the vicinity of those Qs in terms of Q, right? So even though it doesn't depend on the direction of the momenta Q, we can write this sort, where was it? We can't really write this sort of expansion anymore, because we just don't know what this coefficient K is. And if you want the full dependence of the fluctuation propagator on the field Q and frequency, this function F is given by this. So basically what happens when I increase the frequency, take the frequency not equal to zero. The zero frequency propagator is like that. And then as I increase frequency, it becomes smoother and probably more analytic. But still, the main contribution, which is at zero frequency, is highly non-analytic, and I cannot expand the fluctuation propagator here. Right? So we weren't able to do any calculations for this type of dependence. Also, it looks very interesting, and we are working on this right now. And we simply assumed that in two-dimensional situation, let's say, there are factors that can restore analyticity of the fluctuation propagator, like frequency or presence of impurities, for example. If we calculate the fluctuation propagator with impurities, we see that instead of this sharp minimum, we have restored the analyticity.
Structure effects making it not isotropic also make it smooth, or that's not the case?
You mean in the generic 2D case? It's possible. Yeah, it's possible, but again, the fluctuations, the minima of the reciprocal propagator will be near several points, not near the
phase. But will it have this cusp, or will, or is that special to the isotropic case?
I would say it is special for the isotropic case with zero impurity concentration. I mean, we really want to analyze this part in more details. It looks very unusual and interesting, right? But we just didn't do much about this now. The main problem is that all the expressions become, just very, very, very difficult to handle them analytically. And we were able to do just numerical calculations with this fluctuation propagator.
That's entirely from A tilde.
No, it comes from F, only from F. Because we have this real part function, right? And this function is different here and there. And you can really expand it at the minimum because of its logarithm. So, yes. Since we restricted ourselves to the clean case, to the zero impurity concentration, we decided to calculate the fluctuation contributions to spin susceptibility and to the quasi-particle decay rate, right? The quantities which do not require the impurities, the impurity concentration. So the spin susceptibility can be obtained from the second derivative of the free energy with respect to the field, where the fluctuation contribution to the free energy is given by the integral of the log of the fluctuation propagator. So now, in the isotropic 3D, if we use this form of the fluctuation propagator, we find that the fluctuation corrections to the spin susceptibility are singular as the function of the difference from transition point in terms of field. This one. They diverge as a square root of epsilon. We can rewrite this expression in this form. So even though the fluctuations are singular, they have this small prefactor, which basically shows the scale of the superconducting to the normal of ratio, the ratio of superconducting and the normal parts of this effect, right? By the way, we can find magnetization, which is just the first derivative of the free energy with respect to field. And using this fluctuation propagator, we found that the fluctuation corrections are proportional to the square root of epsilon, so they're not singular at all. But the susceptibility has this factor, and in principle, if we calculate the fluctuation corrections from normal to the uniform superconducting transition state, superconducting state, which corresponds to QC or just BCA, QC equals zero or just BCA state, then we see that the correction to the susceptibility are not singular at all. So indeed. In three-dimensional case, in the isotropic three-dimensional case, I'm going back. The fluctuation corrections give the singular part to the susceptibility, which is absent in the BCS type of fluctuations. Okay. If you look at the corrections to the susceptibility in the generic 3D or 2D cases, when Q when the degeneracy of Q with respect to rotation is lifted and we have just several fixed directions for the QC, we use this form of the fluctuation propagator and we see that the corrections to the susceptibility in 3D are not singular, right? This term is just zero at the transition point. In the generic 2D case, because of lower dimensionality of this integral, we find the logarithmic singularity in this accessibility, but still there is a small prefactor in front of the of this expression. Right? So our hope is that in some materials, the ratio of the energy gap to the Fermi energy can be not that small, right? So we can really see this sort of the contribution of the corrections, right?
Wait, but this is what's different about this from FFLO or anything else?
This is FFLO.
If you did it for normal 2D BCS, wouldn't it be the same expression?
Oh. I don't know. If I calculate the fluctuation corrections to the susceptibility near the BCS transition,
yeah.
2D BCS, I can tell right now. Yeah. But anyway, you see that in the generic situation, when the phase space of fluctuation is reduced by the crystal symmetry, we have the reduction of the fluctuation corrections.
Yeah.
So the most singular type of them is for isotropic 3D case.
You think about this generic 3D case. So this mm-hmm. is what you have sort of below the, if you follow the transition line down, there's a region where it's to the BCS state, and then it.
You mean if I go from.
When he says generic, he means with Chris, with band structure.
Yeah, right? I know.
It's a band structure. Right?
Yeah.
You mean if I go along this line, right?
Yeah, so this, uh-huh. if I start on the right.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
And that's, you know, that's just going to the usual uniform state. Right.
Like that? Or
yeah.
like this?
Yeah, mm-hmm. like this.
Okay.
Up here, I in the upper portion, I go to the FFLO. So
yeah.
It'd be this generic transition. There's a point where, you know, where your intermediate line hits the upper line. So there
the tracheolytic
must be bifurcating or something out at k yeah. equals 0.
Their Q is equal to 0.
Sorry?
I mean, Q...
But the dispersion is softer there, right?
But this is a zero temperature calculation.
Yeah.
The singularity is...
Right, right, of course. Yeah, yeah. In the first place, this is the zero temperature result.
Presumably the region is sure, but the region... The approximation of zero temperature is basically T much less than T Fermi, not delta here, because you're computing
yeah.
susceptibilities that don't involve GAD. You know.
Wait a second. It's really zero temperature calculation because of.
How good is zero?
I integrate over frequencies, right?
So you calculate the propagator before doing the frequency
yeah.
integral here.
Okay.
You calculate the fluctuation propagator.
Yeah.
So you have some expression that you wrote down at zero temperature. So what is the, if I say low temperature should be a good approximation, how low does it have to be? Is it T much less than TF or?
Right.
We
have to.
There's no gas
theory.
Right.
So
there's
no other scale.
Yeah.
Right. There's
yeah.
no
other scale. It should be.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So T must be much less than. Let's say. Yeah. We have to say that this expression goes to infinity, right? In order to rewrite everything in terms of logarithms, right? So basically, T must be less than any term here. In the W.
The scale is T Fermi. So.
Yeah.
Well, no. The field is of order to get.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a field.
Oh yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's a border
right. Right.
Yeah. right. That sets the scale
mm-hmm.
for the whole phenomenon.
Right, right.
So there is another scale in there.
And by the way, I mean, I don't know if it's relevant to your question, but as we cross this transition line, I mean, the Q, the moment of the Cooper pair, goes to zero as we approach the tricritical point. Right.
Yeah, no, yeah.
So we have different situation here and there.
It should be Q to the fourth instead of Q squared.
There it'll be
thing.
Q to the
yeah.
fourth no matter
yeah.
what.
Yeah. Right. Right. Right.
And you
right.
get some strong divergences there in the thermal
yeah.
effects.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Okay. Let me just briefly show you. Yeah. Okay. That go ahead. Includes thermal effects.
It's creation of free energy. It's doing the Gaussian fluctuations.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Let me mention our calculations for the framework self-energy or the quasi-particle decay rate. So basically, we need to calculate this diagram, which is graphical representation for this part, for this renormalization, for this for the contribution from the fluctuations to the self-energy of spin-up fermions. And here we have the fluctuation propagator formed by one spin up and one spin down line, if you want. So this green function corresponds to the spin down fermions, right? So then the quasi-particle decay rate will be given by the imaginary part of this diagram. And we found that in the isotropic 3D case, where the fluctuations are the strongest, as we see, the ratio of the quasi-particle decay rate to the gap is proportional to the square root of the frequency, right? In the generic 3D situation, well, it's even more interesting because of now the corrections to the decay rate become anisotropic and then depend on the direction of the momentum. So on the Fermi energy, on the Fermi surface, we find that the situation really depends on the value of the parameter, which is basically the Fermi velocity for this direction of k times q, times qc, I'm sorry, minus 2hc. So if this parameter is not zero, then we restore the Fermi liquid pressure. But if it is zero, then we see that the correction to the quasi-particle decay rate are proportional to the our linear function of frequency. Okay? And again, we have those small prefactors here, there, and there.
So this is special directions on the Fermi surface?
Yes. Yes. Right. Right.
Some hot spot.
Exactly. I didn't want to say this, but yes. In the generic 2D, the situation is also strongly anisotropic. For most values of k, we have this Fermi liquid picture, but for the k which satisfy the equation WA equals zero, we have the square root dependence on omega, right? Not even linear. And finally, to compare this to the transition from normal metal to the uniform BCS state, in the isotropic 3D, we restore the omega square dependence, just like in the isotropic 2D case here. Okay.
What's driving that transition? The bottom calculation, what are you?
Oh, just if we consider hypothetical situation of transition from normal to the uniform BCS state in paramagnetically limited superconductor. Okay. That's it. Well, of course, the transition will be to the FLO state, but no.
This is some hidden thing inside.
Yeah. Well, we just wanted to see what will happen if the fluctuations are near zero Q, near one point, not near the sphere or several values of Q. So, well, here are my conclusions. We have studied the superconducting fluctuations near the quantum critical point or quantum phase transition from normal to the superconducting state at zero temperatures and H equals HC. We derived the general form of fluctuation propagator at finite Q and omega, finite momenta and frequencies in 3D, 2D situations and in the generic case. And then we see that in the absence of impurities and orbital effects, the superconducting fluctuations give divergent contribution to the spin susceptibility in the isotropic 3D case because, as was predicted, the phase space for the fluctuations is the greatest there, right? And the corresponding quasi-particle decay rate shows very strong non-thermolytic behavior there. In the generic cases, the phase volume for the fluctuations is reduced, and we don't have singular contributions to the spin susceptibility, but still the quasi-particle decay rate manifests highly anisotropic behavior as a function of direction of the momenta on the Fermi surface, so it could be proportional to the first power of omega along some lines in 3D, or to the square root of omega in some points, at some points in 2D situations. So finally, we want to look, and we are looking now at the situation where we have some impurity concentration. Well, the order of phase transition is particularly important because of, I didn't mention it, but everywhere here we assume that the transition of the, is of a second order, right? But there are works which show that in some situations, like in the presence of phase fluctuations, the transition could be changed to the first order, and so on. So we need to consider this, you know, those modifications more carefully. Shimahara and Brazovsky, yeah. Yeah. And finally, we want to go to non-zero temperatures. And for zero temperature, you know, this sharp behavior of the fluctuation propagator looks very interesting for us. We want to consider it. So that's basically it. Yeah, thanks.
One of the sets of experiments you mentioned were transport conductivity, I think.
Yeah.
Do you have any calculations that indicate how that
works? We are making them right now. We are doing them right now because we need impurities, right, for the conductivity. So this is work in progress indeed.
Is it a superconducting state?
Huh?
Conductivity, is it?
No, this would be the paraconductivity is your approach from.
Yeah. Right.
The fluctuation
effect. Yeah, this is what we do. Yeah, the fluctuation corrections with conductivity on the normal side. Yeah.
So usually to do this kind of calculations, you need to neglect critical region, and for the zero field transition, that critical region is very small. So is it the same thing here with the transition?
What do you mean by critical region?
I mean the region where you actually need to consider critical fluctuations.
Well, let's say we are far enough from the transition line, but still within the, you know, the range of fields which are given by the corresponding Ginzburg number. That's right. So the fluctuation corrections are Gaussian, for example.
Gaussian.
Gaussian fluctuation.
That's the issue with the order of the phase transition. That critical region may actually be first order.
Yeah.
Right. But the assumption here is.
Yeah, right.
You're far enough outside, so it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You're in the Gaussian regime.
Yes.
Yeah.
But how close should you be not to be in the Gaussian regime?
Not to be in the Gaussian regime for the flow phase.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the question of redoing the Ginzburg estimate for FFLO, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something we should. Only in thinking about the order of the phase transition, you're going to have to.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, yeah, once we start looking at this, yeah, we have to do with it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're right. It's a very good question.
The fluctuations are also enhanced by the pseudo one-dimensionality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
OK, if no more questions, let's thank the speaker again.
And we have time for our next talk.